Everybody sees what's going on in Palestine right now. I just want to give blessings to my people out there. That's the real fight.
What do you think about the police?
There ain't nothing but pigs, man.
This is not America. This is Polynesia. Our country was stolen.
The passion that some of our liberals feel the day after the revolution, the passion and concern they feel for the fascists.
Welcome to Inner City Left. Today is May 10th. 2024, Amin TNK alongside Emoji Lil Tanky Sumler. What's up, bro? How are you doing?
Yeah, it was good.
I want to ask you about Hillary Clinton, if I might. I feel like we're always on Hillary. We're on Hillary Clinton watch right now. So she was on her favorite network, MSNBC. Yesterday, and I don't know if you remember, she was on like one of those late night talk shows where she was like, people need to get over themselves. Okay, so this is her new comments coming out. She said, I've had many I guess they're talking about the college protests, and she says, I have had many conversations, as you have had, talking to the person on MSNBC, with a lot of young people over the last many months now. They don't know very much at all about the history of the Middle East or, frankly, about history in many areas of the world, including our own country. She claimed that there was a deal on the table that her husband, Slick Willie Clinton, had on the table that Yasser Arafat and the PLO turned down. She was just talking a lot of stuff. I wanted to get your reaction on number one, her comments, and number two, is this a winning strategy for the Democrats to keep parading Hillary Clinton out here?
So you give a lot in that question. It's a lot of different ways I want to break that down. So Hillary Clinton is fascinating, right? Again, I try to look at all politicians dispassionately, no matter how I personally feel about them. This is a person that understands policy extremely well. Probably one of the most, as far as policy goes, gifted Secretary of States we've ever had. Like, this is a person that knows all of these people in the world and has relationships with them, good or bad. She knows these people going back decades. You know, you couldn't ask for a person that has more experience than she does. Where she goes wrong is she doesn't really understand how to relate to people. She doesn't understand what moves people. She never has, right? She thinks that what feels obvious to her and certain to her, I mean, they talk about the patriarchy, but this is the living face of the disapproving grandmother, right? And she's always been that way. This is a person that uses shame to try to motivate people and manipulate people into doing the things that she wants. And that's just not a powerful motivator often if you don't know the specific triggers of a person you're attempting to utilize in that way. This is a gift she's never had, right? Take on top of the fact of her own questionable morality as far as several things. This is a person that's posited herself as at least a second wave feminist girl boss who's never been able to explain the overages of her husband and his particular proclivities, right? This is a person that wrote letters to the Daughters of the Confederacy. This is a person that was a Republican early on in their life and actually helped campaign for Republicans, right? So then when you start to see these incredibly conservative positions from her all the time to insist that people vote the way that she thinks makes a lot of sense. She doesn't even understand that her core demographic is a bunch of people that use words like platforming voices, not speaking over people, not gaslighting people, right? These are the people that she hopes will vote for her, people that use this type of language, people that by and large reject a generation that rejects shame. You've never seen a more shameless generation than the youth. And so they see this person and they see she just feels out of touch. She alienates them because she never empathizes with them. She doesn't have that, you know, I too was a young person in college and I believe had greater morals, because her morals, her morality at their age was trying to help a Republican who was Barry Goldwater, right? I mean, that, she was a campaign aide for him. That's what she did in her college days. So, of course, she can't relate to young people who are rejecting this premise of empire, rejecting this premise of American morality is infallible, right? Our allies are infallible. These are people that really grew up, right or wrong, believing in a rules-based order. These are people, you know, I remember the whole Coney 2012, right? This is, those are your voters, the kind of people that want to go after bad guys, right? And you tell them what makes a bad guy, and then they watch our allies do the things that bad guys do, right? And you've got these guys pumped up to be excited about a certain type of activism that you're now going completely against. You're asking people to dispose of their brands, and everyone is a brand these days, right? I mean, that's one thing at Inner City Left, we definitely understand. You're asking me to crush my brand for very little payoff. Like, Biden and the Democrats delivered nothing to this generation. They did not generate a rescheduling of marijuana. They actively fought against it, no matter what they try to posit themselves as now. They had years. They channeled raising minimum wage to at least $15 an hour, which I got to tell you, in most parts of the country, still isn't enough to live on. These are the Democrats, and this is what their legacy has been in the past 4 years. And now you have paternal grandma, you know, because she's one of the big boy club, you know, and it's like, well, I'm disappointed at you. And most of the people she's talking to are the kind of people that are pulling up at these events with placards talking about her and her husband's dalliances. These are people that are talking about her when she was a Secretary of State, saying things like, trying to make a joke out of murder. We saw he died. Like, the generation of people you're talking to.
In reference to the war in Libya.
Again, NATO is just a defensive military. Libya was not in. Libya had actively signed agreements with the West where they were quietly dismantling their whole weapons of mass destruction program. And it was known, right? This type of actions with her as a Secretary of State actually made us much less safe, because what it showed nations that are on the nuclear bubble, nations like North Korea, is better not to disarm. It's fact, if we had, they would never put stuff with us, right? So this is the person that's attempting to shame people. She doesn't understand the people she's attempting to manipulate. And it's to the detriment of the Democrats. Really, that there needs to be like a, I mean, Lord, not that I want to give the Democrats the game, right? But they need to have their younger, more intersectional voices out there. If they hadn't compromised the squad, it should have been the squad that was getting them to and over the hump with young people now. But they've
I thought it was very interesting that the Biden administration, the reelection committee, reached out to the Nikki Haley voters of all people to be a part of sort of this new Democratic coalition of voters, which, like you said, isn't offering anything to college students, you know, or isn't offering anything to poor people. They seem to continue to dangle Roe v. Wade over people's heads.
They can be codified at any time. You have a president that's using word like illegals, right? But you need the brown vote, and you need the black vote, and you need the Muslim vote, and you're using these words. The core Republican, what he's betting on is not the youth. He's betting on the people that are running from the Republican Party, the Liz Cheneys of the world. And that tells you already what his next administration is going to be like. Because if by some miracle he wins, it'll definitely be due to those people. The young people are largely going to sit this out or go third party, as I've seen, you know, whatever your particular flavor is. when I'm in the streets, I'm hearing a lot of Cornell. I'm hearing a lot of Jill Stein. God forbid, I'm hearing some RFK. The thing is, no one is saying Biden.
And no one is saying. Yeah, and RFK Jr. just came out and he said that there was a worm in his brain, was eating his brain. And this is a person that has the most third party votes. I always find that interesting how, anyway, I'm not going to jump into that. I just wanted to add that in there. It's not a lot of great choices out there. And but I guess he would be, anyway, let's not go there. I have another story I want to talk to you about because there's so many things happening in the world. Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday came out and said, among scuttlebutt, that no more weapons will be sent to the Israelis for the invasion in Rafah. And I guess the prime minister wanted to address this and said, today we are much stronger. We are determined and united in order to defeat our enemies and those who want to destroy us. But in reference to the United States not sending weapons, if we need to stand alone, we will stand alone. I want to hear your reaction to this, as well as, you know, what's happening on the ground right now. And, you know, what are your thoughts?
Israel's never stood alone. OK, and that mythology just has to die. All of the West stands with Israel, no matter what they do, right or wrong. Like a good friend, I'm here for you, whether you're right, whether you're wrong. I'm a good friend. And that's what the West has been, right? So this whole language, it's just this dichotomy of bully aggressor, right? Like you're beating your opponent to literal death, but the whole time you have the psychology of a victim. That's the Israeli national mind state right now. Like, as to Biden cutting off shipments, it's just hard for me to believe that any of that's real. It's much more plausible that he understands that Ukraine is at the brink of literal defeat. There are rumors every day that the Kharkiv offensive is about to begin. There are unconfirmed reports that people are attempting to take Zelensky's life.
That happened 2 days ago, yeah?
Right? Yeah.
This week.
Right. He's replaced his bodyguards. That was something that's happening within the last 48 hours. If there are any weapons in the world, the United States is sending them to Ukraine. They just don't have them. They understand that what Israel is doing right now is a luxury, whereas what Ukraine is doing is mission critical, and it's already, realistically, it's too late. Everything that they had, the problem is a capacity issue. It goes back to what Yellen was talking about. Unfortunately, the West, because they've chosen to outsource manufacturing to nations where it can be done for much cheaper labor, have created logistics issue. There is that word again, right? So like now, even though corporate profits are at an all-time high because they're not paying Americans to do these jobs, unfortunately, now you have to bring these things from wherever in the world they're being created. And we start to talk about things like weapons and ammunition. You know, that's just a problem. You really need to be able to, a country needs to be able to make as much as they need as quickly as they can. And they need to be able to do this as often as possible. And right now, just based upon the posture of the work that we've done with our allies across the country and the world, I'm sorry, across the world, they just don't have it to give. They just don't have it. Not for luxury. But it doesn't matter because Israel is a huge weapons manufacturer and they're probably more than capable of covering their own needs for something as consider again, right? The theater of battle for Ukraine. Ukraine is an area that's almost as big as Texas, right? And the battle line is stretched all across the country, right? Now, there are areas where it's more effective, more hot than others, right? Gaza is not that way. Gaza is not very big. Gaza is just about the size of Washington, D.C., something like that, you know? And everybody is now in this one very small area, right? So the amount of ammunition you would need for such a mission, it's literally dwarfed compared to the needs of the Ukrainians right now. If there is really any type of delay, it would be my gamble that really somewhere Biden is making a political decision. Israel is probably not about to fall, but Ukraine might. And I can't have that happen on my watch. It'll be inconvenient to the Israelis, but they will definitely be able to complete their mission. Whereas the entire project of Ukraine might fail if I don't get them everything that I can right now. Looks like a little bit of real politics wrapped up behind, oh, look at what I'm doing for my base. I'm not funding Israel. You get to try to double dip a little bit.
Yeah, well, let's pivot from there. You mentioned Ukraine and, you know, the new bill that was passed and, you know, these weapons manufacturers creating more weapons for the Ukrainian front. May Day was yesterday. There's been a lot of conversation surrounding Vladimir Putin and you know, this celebration. I wanted to ask you just a little bit of a background about May Day and maybe why Russia would think that this is a special, even more special day simply because of the circumstances surrounding Ukraine and NATO and the larger conversation surrounding them and against the West, really.
So I don't make a statement about cult of personalities, right? Because the Americans and the West at large really can only see Putin as this cult of personality figure that's bigger than life. And he represents all of Russia. And he's the, you know, he has people he has to answer to, just like everyone else in this world. There is no one powerful person that stands alone and answers to no one. And that's just the reality. So it's important to look at these people with a certain degree of dispassion, right? I don't look at people as good or evil. I don't look at Hillary Clinton as good or evil. I don't look at Putin as good or evil. I look at them as politicians, and I try to assume what their particular agendas may be. Putin's agenda is not hard. It's very similar to Xi Jinping's in that while Russia didn't have 100 years of disgrace, they had a good 30 years of embarrassment, right? When they're having to live through the dismantling of the Soviet Union, watching the incompetence of a Gorbachev, wondering, you know, what is going to happen to the Russian project as balkanization happens and all of these republics go elsewhere, you see a person that has a deep love for Russia and what it means to be Russian, whatever that means, and a person that doesn't want that to go away. And that's really the essence of what he was saying. Again, you have to listen to the things that even your opponents say. If you, I don't understand this Western and American in particular obsession about not listening to your enemies, right? Like, I just don't understand that. Because you have to know yourself and you have to know your enemy to win any type of conflict, right? And we're certainly in a state of conflict. The things that Putin says and what he said yesterday in his victory speech, May Day speech, was, I don't want to see a world without Russia, which tells you he sees the Ukrainian conflict as an existential conflict, the same way the Americans saw the Cuban Missile Crisis as an existential conflict. When he's willing to have this war, limited military, special military operation, whatever, with Ukrainians, which he sees as kind of a family feud, right? Like these weren't, they were with us and now they're not with us. And this is almost like a civil war in many ways, right? When he starts to see this constant interference by the West, you know, continuous lines where they're making these promises to the Russians, you know, in when the balkanization of the Soviet Union's happening, they're speaking with the Americans and the Americans are promising them that NATO is not going to extend not one inch, right? But NATO is now all the way up to their door, right? Literal door. And when they see these kind of things, they understand that with the state of missile technology, you have to have room, right, to have some type of defense. If you have a literal adversary state. And this is so funny because Macron made much the same statement. We have to defend Ukraine because if Ukraine falls, Russian missiles will be able to target NATO, right? Without ironically looking at how Russia's going to feel exactly the same way. But now all of those red lines have been moved, right? Oh, we're not going to give them the F-16. Oh, we're not going to give them the Abrams. Oh, we're not going to give them the ATACMS. Slowly but surely, every single one of those red lines that the Americans set for themselves, as the Ukrainians did worse, moved away. And so, again, Russia has to wonder, what is the next super weapon that they could give? And there ain't that many that are left in the box that haven't been used, right? Which is why they're making statements about their tactical nuclear preparedness. Like, these are not things the countries joke about, right? I mean, they're just not. It's like being in a hood and someone sees you going around their yard and you start loading your guns, you know, cocking your guns. You start, you know, disassembling them, reassembling them, showing your preparedness, right? You don't do those things to virtue signal. You do those things because you want to make sure you are ready. Whether or not your opponent thinks you're serious, that's irrelevant. It's immaterial. And those are the things that Putin is talking about, making sure that his nation stays in a state of readiness. Like, I think these are very serious times, and I don't think that he's doing these things. First off, he's just been reelected in the Russian process, right? So he doesn't have to campaign, right? Now he gets to do what he campaigned on. And what he campaigned on is keeping Russia safe. And there's no reason to believe, based upon who he is and how he's moved throughout politics all these years, that he's not as serious as anyone else that says these things. You think about Bibi Netanyahu, exactly the same type of, I will do whatever it takes to make sure my nation always stands type of figure, except less corruption. To the best of my knowledge, Putin doesn't have any like pending charges where if he's not the prime minister, he will immediately, you know, don't pass go, go to jail, which BB actually does have.
Yeah. And has been removed and from the prime ministership because of his ties to corruption. And, you know, they are well recorded. That's a great point, and this is going to be my last question for you. We are witnessing now that, you know, the President Biden now in some of the lowest approval ratings. Most young people are sort of revolting against the Democratic Party specifically because of him. And on the Republican side, you have basically the only candidate that matters, just under several charges constantly. And I wonder, like, what are we have, like you said, you mentioned Cornel West, you mentioned Jill Stein, the De La Cruz candidacy. I think that's the Socialist Party. These are three other candidates that are all basically saying, hey, we don't want war in Gaza. We think Palestine should have their own state. You know, it seems to me like a very easy choice, not Trump and not Biden. I you know, again, what are people afraid of? What are they worried about in terms of, is it access? Is it propaganda? Why do people continue to stay with these two parties, which don't serve most people?
So a lot of it is reaction. It's right. It's like, this is why I say having an official party affiliation often feels like being a bit in a cult. Like, you don't question, right? Gang, right?
And red and blue.
Red and blue, right? And so, like, no matter who gang is, we stick with gang. But you have to ask yourself, like, what are the benefits of affiliation? People are just used to seeing themselves as de facto, well, Democrats are the good ones, Republicans are the bad ones.
Or vice versa.
Which is why I say again, right, utilizing lenses like good and bad are just not relevant. And what's much more important is think about what your core fundamental policies are and who maintains those, right? Not like who threatens to take them away or who wants to get them for you, but who's actively working, demonstrating they live those ideals and going with that. We live in such a culty clout area, right? That you don't want to be wrong. You don't ever want to be wrong. It's like, oh, you picked the president. Your president didn't win, you know. But the reality is your president can be elected and you can still lose. Like, I don't think there's ever been a presidency that was more effectively demonstrating such a thing like that as literally the Biden presidency. I mean, who can say that their material conditions are improved, right? Who's making more money in relation to relative position where you were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, right? Like on paper, you may have been making whatever, right? And now it's a little bit higher. But when you look at how much food has increased, how much fuel has increased, how much health insurance has increased, how much, you know, tuition has increased, most people would find that their material conditions have actually gotten worse as opposed to better, right? So what does that mean if you pick this person and they did not see to your material conditions? Because ultimately, that's what matters. Is my standard of living better, right? That comes even before activism with the average voter, right? And this is why the Democrats are so out of touch.
Yeah, and it also seems true to say that, you know, the college students have this ability to protest because most people are working long hours, multiple jobs often. I don't know how many of our viewers are in the United States. I mean, we're in the United States, but this is a record number of homelessness out there right now, several encampments here in Washington, D.C. And I agree. It seems sort of like a gang mentality or whatever it may be, or people are just afraid of envisioning a better world, envisioning a better future, which I
Americans and Westerners are just natural reformers, right? And I mean that in the best way possible. They cannot imagine literally starting over from scratch, building something organic that is in concert with the want and will of the people. It's never happened. And so they can't even imagine. At best, they can imagine slight tweaks that'll make things a little bit more manageable. But they can never say, what would be the perfect world and how do I bring that about? It's only, well, we got to do the best we can with the system we have, as if the system is eternal or immortal or even the only one that exists. There are systems.
Or it's even been around for thousands of years. I mean, exactly. We was hearing the work week is basically just a little over 100 years old. I mean, there's, right. You know, anyway. Yeah.
When we talk about the intransigence of Americans, right? Taiwan has been part of China longer than America has existed as a country, right? Like that, just for scope and scale in these kind of things, right? We have these documents that, however you feel about them, are meant to be very difficult to modify. They're meant to be unmalleable, unworkable, right? As if 250 years ago, the only best ideas that could ever happen for how to run a civilization existed, as if that society wouldn't continue to age, continue to grow, continue to evolve, as if they wouldn't learn to cherish new things, have new wants, new desires, right? And there is no real way within these systems that exist to make those happen.
Yeah, I talk about this all the time. You know, I'm a big NBA fan. Every year at the end of the season, the NBA Players Association, the coaches and the referees all get together and they discuss changes in the rules, things that need to be tweaked, modified to make the league better. And I always, you know, we watch a lot of these guys, the former CIA guys and the DOD guys, and they're always talking about the beauty of, you know, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment and the Third Amendment. And, you know, I think even though, like, again, these rules can be changed and can be fixed, they're not applied to everyone. And I think the rules would be much, it would feel the constitutional rights would feel more meaningful and have more weight to them if they just apply to all citizens. And it feels like that is my biggest grief before even anything gets started, like right. Just the application again. And just the whole idea of rules based law and, you know, okay, well, it's good to have, I can have missiles here, you know, and I can basically cool your government here, But if you have any any involvement with anyone around me, that's a no.
Right. Like trying to make the average Westerner understand, like from a material point of view, what is the difference between staging a Maidan coup where a government is elected? OK, Viktor Yanukovych is elected by the people, and then you stage a coup and get that guy kicked out. And it's not conspiracy theory. I mean, there's videos of
documentaries
Newland saying, look, this is who we want to put in power there. I think this guy's going to be good. Look, Europe's not going to like it, but F the EU. I mean, up until very recently, that's the vice. What was their position? They were the second secretary assistant of the Secretary of State assistant, right? Like you're like not the Secretary of State, but like right under that person, right? Like you got caught on a hot mic saying that about Europe. Like not the Russians,
not to mention she was saying that there was going to be a nasty surprise the week or so before the terrorist attack in Moscow.
Right. And what separates those statements? Almost a decade. The first statement was made almost a decade ago, knowing that war was inevitable based upon those actions. Right. But then the Americans, because they need the excitement of the tanks and the bombs and the missiles. Right. They're like, oh, my God, look at this violence that the Russians have enacted on the Ukrainians with total lack of awareness for how we got there. Right. But
causality, as we
say. Causality. Victoria Nuland knew in 2014 what was going to happen. And she knew the effect that this would have on the EU's economy and their military posture. And her answer was F the EU. So,
right. Yeah, we've seen Garland Nixon and other people who talked about the United States plan was to sink Europe and is to sink Europe, as well as, again, they are big fans of destabilizing countries, whether it's militarily, politically, or economically. Inner City Left on Instagram is where you can find us. I want to, if I can, just show our viewers cool little Inner City Left t-shirt if certain tiers on our Patreon. I want to give a big shout out to our Patreon subscribers. I forgot to take the list out, but we send each and every one of them our love. Any other final thoughts? Thank you. Before we get out of here, man.
Watch your ops, because your ops are watching you.
Appreciate y'all. We out.